From NBC New York, this is the news. Reported by Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
The first figures from the new census show more Americans now live in the suburbs than in the cities. The Census Bureau said it was startled at the enormous size of the American flight from the city. Everyone knew there had been an exodus, but until now, nobody knew how big it was. Most of those moving to the suburbs have been white people. Black people have moved into the cities, mainly from the South, as the whites have moved out. But people were leaving the cities long before that. One of the earliest American attitudes, in fact, still with us to some extent, was that cities were centers of dirt, disease, crime, licentiousness, and vice, and that everyone who could ought to live among grass and trees. So now, there are more people outside the cities than inside.
Population has shrunk in the rural areas. The number of farms and farmers has declined. Migration patterns have persisted from mid-country out, from south to north, and the coastal areas continue to grow. Population in many of the central cities of our metropolitan areas has declined sharply. And by sharply, I mean by more than 10%. The suburban rings have grown rapidly and substantially. The number of people living in the suburbs is now greater than the number of people living in the central cities, and this in spite of the annexations that have been made during the last decade. Since all of us are interested in having an exact census, we at the Bureau have discussed local situations with city and county officials and acted to double-check any possible errors in the count. Without exception, any change due to the problem of counting people has been insignificant.
The town of Whitehaven, Maryland, claims it has a population of 87. But the postmistress says no census forms at all passed through her office, and she thinks the town was skipped entirely. Officials of surrounding Wicomico County say it has 7,000 more people than the census counted, and officials of Salisbury, the county seat, say it has 3,000 more people than the census counted. One census taker in Salisbury told why she thinks other census takers missed some people.
A lot of people that had the city sections also, a lot of people work. All right, you have to get them. If you don't get them during the day when you're making your regular rounds, then you have to get them in the evenings or on Saturdays. And after they went back twice, as we were told in training, that was all. They didn't bother with it.
And they didn't try to get the information from the neighbors.
Right.
Dozens of cities and counties all over the country think they got a short count.
Birmingham, Alabama is one of the bigger cities contesting the census report. City officials who promote Birmingham hard as a growing business center advertise that there are 340,000 residents. But the Census Bureau says it counted only 297,000 residents, fewer than 10 years ago. Birmingham launched a campaign to prove the Census Bureau wrong.
City workers and volunteers this week are canvassing two neighborhoods looking for families the census taker missed.
Hello, we're from the city of Birmingham making a recheck on the 1970 census. Was you counting?
No, I weren't up here at the time.
I was living here at the time. And how many is in the family?
At present, five.
1,500 Birmingham residents who think the census did not count them have mailed in coupons run in local papers. The motive for the recount is money, not pride. Birmingham stands to lose some funds distributed on the basis of population.
We'll lose income through our county tobacco tax, beer tax, and state liquor store tax. Also, we will lose $200,000 or $300,000 or more through the split up of the state gasoline tax. So adding that all up, we're talking about a lot of money. The federal grants, if you're one of the 25, 30, or 35 largest cities in the United States, you do get consideration, particularly under the Law Enforcement Assistance Act. I'm familiar with that. That is the Omnibus Crime Safe Streets Act. The larger the city, the more help that you would get from Uncle Sam in combating crime and delinquency and drugs and things like that.
The Census Bureau admits that its count here and elsewhere may be off by as much as 3%. The Bureau offers to add to its official figures anyone found by local recounts to have been missed by the census taker. Ron Nesson, NBC News, Birmingham, Alabama.
The American dislike of the city is old and deep. Thomas Jefferson said if we ever were piled on top of each other in cities as the Europeans were, he said then we'd become as corrupt and immoral as they were. As soon as the trolley car was invented and the automobile, people found they could get out of the cities, and the new census shows that by now most of us have.
The Huntley Brinkley Report is produced by NBC News and brought to you in color by Alka-Seltzer. When your stomach's out of shape, nothing works better than Alka-Seltzer.
Just think, our first home-cooked meal, dear.
Honey, you know, I'd never seen a dumpling that big.
Well, I wanted to impress you.
It was all perfect, darling. Just perfect.
Well, let's see. What would you like for tomorrow, dear? Is it beginning to rain, dear?
No.
Marshmallowed meatballs. Poached oysters.
What love doesn't conquer, Alka-Seltzer will.
Assistant Secretary of the Interior Carl Klein told a Senate subcommittee today that the administration believes mercury pollution to be what he called an intolerable threat to the health and safety of Americans. He said it must be eliminated, and he added that the administration is moving rapidly and forcefully to do it. So far, the government has filed suit against 8 big companies in 7 states. Heavy air pollution still hung over many cities on the eastern seaboard today. Temperatures and humidity remained high, and yesterday's thundershowers did little to relieve the condition. There were indications it would remain through the weekend. Reasons never fully explained, the U.S. Army has for years busily piled up huge stocks of poison gases, nerve gases, and various hideous, noxious chemicals. President Nixon finally ordered it to stop making the stuff since it is virtually useless, even in a war. Now the Army has to dispose of it, and today it announced 3,000 tons of nerve gas will be hauled by freight train from Alabama and Kentucky cross-country to North Carolina, then loaded into an old ship, hauled down 280 miles off the coast of Florida, and dumped at sea. It's in containers. Eventually, they may leak. Governor Kirk of Florida said the decision to dump it off his coast was incredible, and he will protest.
When she gets back tomorrow, our daughter is going to love her room. Colors.
And washable, too. This Regal wall satin's great.
Guitar goes there, posters there, and the helmets
by the oxygen tank and the ski poles.
What a daughter.
Skydiving, scuba diving, astrophysics. About dry already.
Think we could paint our room?
Well, painting's easy, but these colors?
Think young, George.
Really?
We know you're going to love it.
Yes, it's very interesting. But could I repaint it a nice soft beige?
Maybe your nearby Benjamin Moore dealer can't help with the generation gap, but he does have all the new colors, even a nice soft beige.
The Rock Music Festival, as an art form and as a commercial enterprise, has its troubles. It is hard to get the customers to pay to get in. They are prone to crash the gates and tear down the fences. Local communities no longer want them for fear of traffic jams, drugs, and lascivious conduct.
It was beginning to shape up as another Woodstock. Thousands of young people headed for the once sleepy town of Middlefield, Connecticut. Many of them had tickets, but they ran into a state police roadblock just a few miles outside Powder Ridge.
Which is given to the town residents.
The roadblock was set up after a court order came down banning the festival. Connecticut authorities felt the weekend might wind up a public nuisance, but still they came with bedrolls, knapsacks, food, their guitars, and a generous supply of marijuana. Hundreds of state troopers were in the vicinity, and the young people were asking when and if the police were moving in. Technically, the Rock Festival won't take place. In fact, even the scheduled musicians are not expected. But this hasn't bothered the more than 10,000 young people already on the ski slopes of Powder Ridge. We're having a festival of life, said one. And so, in the 90-degree heat, they're playing their guitars, handing out free ice cream, sleeping, swimming, smoking, and waiting out the establishment. This is Liz Trotta, NBC News, reporting.
Around 1840, after China was open to trade with the West, the British developed a commercial traffic in selling opium to the Chinese. The emperors asked them to stop, saying it was destroying their people, and the British responded that may be true, but they couldn't afford to give up the revenue. So they had the Opium War, the British fighting to force the Chinese to buy what they didn't want. The British won, and opium is popular in China to this day. Now, today, Turkey raises poppies and sells opium freely. Through illegal channels, it is turned into heroin and sold in the United States. The U.S. government has asked Turkey to stop it. The Turks respond that no doubt it does destroy human lives, but they need the money.
It looks innocent enough, but the opium poppy, which thrives in central Turkey, is increasingly a symbol of trouble. It feeds the growing drug menace in the United States, and it's the cause of growing friction between the U.S. and Turkey. The friction is due to recent threats by some American officials to cut back aid and trade with Turkey if opium production isn't stopped completely, not just reduced. These threats have infuriated Turkish politicians. The Turks don't like to be pushed around. In Parliament, the opposition party has condemned U.S. arrogance and has called for an investigation of a new program to control opium production, a program backed by the United States. Part of that program is to crack down on smuggling in the remote opium provinces, smuggling that until now has been an accepted practice. Special narcotics brigades have been set up, and thanks to a $3 million American loan, police now have the equipment they need. Getting them to use the new gear is something else. American advisors say results are less than they'd hoped for. But for the first time, Turkish agents have been making some raids on their own without the help of U.S. agents. In this area, they've confiscated 200 pounds of illegal opium. The Turkish government can also take credit for a sharp cutback in opium production. From 21 provinces 2 years ago to seven now, next year, planting will be legal in only four provinces. Still, the potential for illegal growing is gigantic. Estimates this year run from 50 to 100 tons. There's so little money in legal opium, used in morphine and other medicine, that growers find they have to sell some of their harvest on the black market to make any profit at all. and that's where the drug traffic begins. This farmer, who's been growing poppies all his life, figures he'll get 4 pounds of opium from this half-acre field. That's worth about $17 legally. On the black market, he can get twice as much. But for all the painstaking work, it's still a pittance, especially compared to the problem it creates in the U.S.
Push up.
The 4 pounds harvested here, if they were smuggled out, refined in France, and sold to addicts in the U.S. as heroin, would bring more than $12,000. This year, for the first time, there is an effort to actually keep an eye on opium growers. Harvesting agents estimate what a field should produce. Later, they check what's been turned in. They also try to talk the farmer into replacing poppies with other crops. It's the American insistence on total elimination of poppy growing that most annoys the Turks. They point out that it's a tradition going back hundreds of years. Also, the farmers themselves prize the poppy seeds and poppy oil, and they're reluctant to turn to other crops. Turkish officials insist that with the new controls, they can cut back sharply on the opium black market. But U.S. agents say flatly that really effective controls would cost far more than the small amount Turkey makes from its legal opium sales. In the long run, it probably would be cheaper for the Turks to eliminate the crop entirely. But for the moment, with emotions so stirred up by American pressure, the chances of that are remote, if only out of Turkish pride. David Burrington, NBC News in Turkey.
If you could put Territon's charcoal filter on the end of your cigarette, if you could put Territon's charcoal filter on your cigarette, well, anyway, if you could put Territon's charcoal filter on your cigarette, you'd have a better tasting cigarette. Of course, we can't guarantee it'd smoke as smooth as a Territon. To begin with, no other cigarette has Territon tobacco. And when that tobacco is smoothed by Territon's activated charcoal filter, it tastes even milder. Better face it, if you want your cigarette to smoke as smooth as a Territon, it'll just have to be a Territon with the activated charcoal filter. That's why us Territon smokers would rather fight than switch.
The Huntley Brinkley Report continues, brought to you by Raid Yard Guard, the backyard insect fogger. Jungle tested to prove it works. Raid Yard Guard.
Deep in a bug-infested jungle, a backyard insect fogger was tested. Its name, Raid Yard Guard. Kills flying insects 20 feet away. Clears them out in minutes. Keeps bugs away for hours. Raid Yard Guard lets you enjoy outdoor living. Clears flying insects out in minutes. Keeps bugs away for hours. Raid Yard Guard, the jungle-tested bug killer.
The Israeli cabinet met in emergency session today for the third time this week to decide on a reply to the American peace proposals for the Middle East. Again, it was stalemated by the six ministers of the Gahal Party, which doesn't want to give up any of the occupied Arab lands. And again, the Gahal threatened to quit the cabinet, and there the matter lay for the time being. Over the southern end of the Suez Canal today, Israeli and Egyptian aircraft fought a sharp battle. Israel said it shot down 4 Egyptian planes. Egypt denied it. United States casualties in the Vietnam War rose last week. 77 Americans were killed, 510 wounded. South Vietnamese killed totaled 323, wounded 769. The Allies said they killed more than 2,200 of the enemy, an estimate. When South Vietnamese troops entered Cambodia, they not only brought the war with them, but the black market as well.
Before the war, Nek Leung was a quiet ferry town on the eastern bank of the Mekong River. Now it is the supply headquarters for South Vietnamese forces in Cambodia, and it is filled with soldiers and noise most of the time. Not only Vietnamese soldiers, who unload and haul tons of supplies and ammunition every day, but Cambodian soldiers as well, who come to Nek Leong to trade on the growing black market. The stocks aren't as plentiful as in Saigon, but there's enough to catch the eye and money of young Cambodians whose government cannot afford to issue all of its soldiers weapons, much less regulation uniforms and field gear. In Nek Leong, the Cambodians can buy field packs, combat boots, uniforms, even sea rations, all of them siphoned into the black market here from South Vietnam. Many of the items are American-made. When Cambodian soldiers come into town, they are required to stack their arms. Neither they nor South Vietnamese soldiers are allowed to carry weapons in the downtown area. The only exception is military policemen. Commanders want to lessen the risk of gunfights. Feeling still runs high over alleged looting by South Vietnamese soldiers when they first entered Nek Leong. In one jewelry shop, the safe was cut open and the display counters ransacked. The owner was wiped out and has moved to Phnom Penh. There are reports in Phnom Penh that even American-made M16 rifles can be purchased on the black market. We did not find any here. But the reports, if true, are not too surprising. In Cambodia, the Saigon black market has simply found another outlet. Kenley Jones, NBC News, Nek Leong.
Linda Kasabian, the state's 21-year-old star witness in the Manson trial, took the stand again today in Los Angeles, this time to testify about a murder that was never brought off.
Charles Manson's attorney, Irving Kinnerick, spent last night in jail for contempt of court for continually interrupting Mrs. Kasabian's testimony. Another defense attorney, Ronald Hughes, also emerged from jail for contempt. The judge said Hughes had been profane. In court, Mrs. Kasabian testified that after Manson left three of his followers to kill Mr. and Mrs. Lino LaBianca, he ordered her to throw away Mrs. LaBianca's billfold in hopes that a black person might find it and be blamed. She said later they stopped while Manson bought milkshakes. Then he had her drive to an ocean beach while they and two other family members drank the milkshakes. At the beach, she said Manson handed her a pocket knife and told her to kill a young actor who lived in an apartment building nearby. She said she replied, "I'm not you, Charlie. I can't kill." Manson ignored her, she said, and told her, "As soon as you see the man, slit his throat." She then testified that she prevented a murder by leading her companions to the wrong apartment. Manson, at several points during the proceedings today, took note of the fact that courtroom spectators watch him closely. Looking out at the crowd, he variously contorted his mouth, twitched his eyebrows, crossed his eyes, and then wound up sticking out his tongue. Mrs. Kasabian has now finished her direct testimony, and cross-examination has begun. Don Oliver, NBC News, Los Angeles.
The first tack taken by the defense in its cross-examination was that what she had said was fantasy, that she was subject to hallucinations as a result of taking drugs. Mrs. Kasabian has admitted taking LSD since 1965.
You know, for years I thought all sleeping tablets were alike. But the other night on TV I found out I was wrong. This commercial proved Nitol was different. It's safe taken as directed, and it's not habit-forming. But what amazed me was how Nitol dissolved twice as fast as the others. Twice as fast. I saw it happen right before my eyes. Nitol helps me get to sleep fast.
Nitol, tablets or capsules, both with a good housekeeping seal.
Jim!
Mike, what are you cleaning your dentures with?
They look nice.
Look, we've known each other about 30 years, right?
So?
Denture breath. What do you use?
Well, I used to use Politan powder, but...
Mike, go back to Politan powder.
Politan powder not only cleans, it helps prevent denture breath. With a combination of cleaners and fresheners other cleansers still don't have.
Jim!
Just like the good old days.
President Nixon will hold a news conference tonight in Los Angeles. NBC News will carry it live on television and radio at 11 o'clock Eastern Time. National Football League players went on strike today to back their contract demands. The decision was made after the 26 club owners said they would open training camps to veterans tonight. Few players were expected to report. Spain ordered the 4,000 subway workers who struck in Madrid yesterday to go back to work or be drafted into the army. Today, they went back to work. John Gardner, head of the National Urban Coalition, will resign soon to lead a movement to bring about changes in the political system. Gardner has referred to it as the third force. A House Senate Conference Committee today approved the Post Office Reform Bill. It would make the post office an independent agency and give postal workers an 8% pay raise. The committee predicted an increase in the first-class rate from 6 to 8 cents an ounce. There was little change today on the New York Stock Exchange. The Dow Jones Industrials lost a fraction of a point, but the price of an average share went up 2 cents. On the American Exchange, an average share gained 3 cents. Trading was moderate. David?
A few countries line their borders with walls and electric fences and watchtowers and floodlights and dogs and guards with machine guns. Others mark them on maps, but nowhere else. At one point, Germany and the Netherlands marked theirs with a little brick divider that you can step over if you want to, and people do.
The North European village of Herzogenrath has split loyalties. An 18-inch high wall down the middle of one street marks an international boundary. On one side is West Germany, on the other, Holland. Relations are good, but border guards at either end of the wall are obliged to check passports and watch for items like tea or coffee that might require customs payments. Periodically, a Polizist patrols the wall where it's forbidden to cross. But when the Polizist leaves, Herzogenrathians take a more casual view of the boundary. Fridays bring big business. In Holland, gambling is illegal. In Germany, it's legal. So the Dutch buy lottery tickets over the wall. All this accommodation to the nuisance of the boundary has not come overnight. The line was drawn by a treaty in Vienna in 1815. And for 155 years since, Herzogenrath has managed to get around it, or more accurately, over it.
Good night, Chet.
Good night, David. Good night for NBC News.